I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road, when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Of travel I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota.
Good evening, Vashon Island. I am Megan Hastings, and this is the Cats and Jammer Follies on KVSH, Voice of Vashon 101.9. And I have with me one of Vashon's most eloquent ladies. I'm just going to say she's awesome, and she's a very well-known painter on the island, Pam Ingalls. If you've ever hung out at the hardware store, you most definitely would know her work from there and many books, and it goes on and on. Pam, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Megan. I don't know how many books, but maybe a few.
Well, you're definitely in a couple. Yeah. Or, I mean, you've done That's a true. Couple, not in a couple. I'm sure you're in a couple, too. Anyway. And in magazines and all sorts of stuff. How did you get your start in painting? Was that always
gosh.
Your love?
That's a whole nother story. But yeah, my parents are both artists, so I kind of followed in their
footsteps. Just came naturally?
Maybe. I don't know. Not really. But I was not that good
well,
when I was a kid.
Seems natural to us.
Now, yeah, I studied. I studied with a master teacher.
Nice.
In my 30s, so that's how I got going.
That's great. Not only is she a painter, but she's also a traveler. And in the early 80s, she took 2 years, and she's going to go into all these details, so if I fumble through this, it's my bad. But 2 years, and she did a piece pilgrimage. In 1982, you started this. Will you please tell us about that?
Yeah.
It's a really interesting story.
So in 1980-81, I was a Jesuit volunteer in Seattle, and I met this guy named Father Jack Morris, a Jesuit, the radical type.
And a Jesuit priest.
A Jesuit priest, yeah. And he had this idea to walk across the U.S. and through Europe to Bethlehem to talk to people about the arms race. And not really to give them an answer, but to ask the question, how could people of faith, any faith, justify nuclear weapons? And
this would have obviously been a very hot topic in those days.
Yeah.
It still is today, but
of course,
really.
It was during the freeze movement. That was a big movement in those days.
What is that?
Oh, people were trying to get the countries that had nuclear weapons to freeze making them. Try not to make any more nuclear weapons. We have plenty. We could blow up the world hundreds of times already. So don't keep making new ones.
Mm-hmm. So this would have been geared toward the United States and
Russia.
And Russia.
Yeah. So Jack Morris, this priest, thought up this idea to walk to Bethlehem, and he...
Which would be the home of...
Of the Prince of Peace.
And I stupidly asked her, who's that? And she's referring to Jesus Christ.
Right.
And I didn't put it together. And I went to Catholic school, so, you know, that's saying a lot about my memory.
It just says a lot about what you think about now.
You would have known it. Goulash. I don't know.
Right. So I was a Jesuit volunteer that year, and there were six of us living in a household and down in the central district of Seattle. And five of us went on this walk. We invited Jack to our house and said, tell us more about what you're thinking. And so
how long had you already worked with Jack as a Jesuit volunteer?
Oh, like the first meeting was like 1 month after we...
Okay, so I didn't know him very well. Okay.
No, I didn't know him very well. But, you know...
But you certainly got to know him.
Yes, very well. You know, we... Yeah, like I said, we didn't know him very well, but he had started the Jesuit Volunteer Corps 30 years before that, and we were members, so he was kind of a celebrity in a certain way.
Yeah,
but,
sure.
And then he also wrote to this other priest who was a diocesan priest, not a Jesuit, just a regular parish priest in Michigan, and that particular guy, his name was Father George Zabelka, and he was the chaplain for the men who dropped the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. He was the U.S., I think it was Air Force chaplain.
That is so heavy.
Yeah. And he went into Nagasaki after, like weeks after the bomb had dropped and saw what had happened. And
wow.
That ate at his conscience
for
years. Of course, at the time, he thought this is the right thing to do. Because that's what everyone thought. But little by little, he changed and became a pacifist and used to give talks on pacifism and classes. And he had Martin Luther King Jr. in his parish before he was a big deal, you know, giving talks in Detroit. And anyway, so
he was a revolutionary person, a thinker at that time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you got to know him when we got to know him on the walk, he was just kind of a normal guy, and he was in his 60s, and we were in our early 20s, so it was like he was kind of old-fashioned, we thought. But anyway,
oh, I can imagine anybody in their 20s thinks anybody over 40 is old-fashioned.
So true,
no matter what generation's going on there.
Anyway, in the end, George came with us, and we were 14 people in the very beginning. We left on Good Friday. It was very Catholic-oriented, but we had quite a few Protestants with us, and then we also had one Muslim woman with us.
And was everybody from the Jesuit Corps?
No.
Okay.
People heard about it. The idea got put into a magazine, and the bishop started talking about it. And
the bishop of Seattle,
Hunthausen, who was a big peacenik himself.
Oh, that's great!
And so people heard about it, and they would write to us, and we'd say, "Oh, why don't you start your own walk?" Or you know, or these people would really fit in with us. And so we ended up with just 14. We wanted to keep it small because
Because you sort of have to, when it's that small, you'd really have to hand pick people.
Yeah, we kind of hand picked them. I wasn't really involved in that part. It took a year to organize it, a little more than a year, actually.
And so tell us a little bit about your journey.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we started at the Bangor submarine base near Bremerton, and that's where nuclear submarines are. And we started on Good Friday, April 9th, 1982,
which is
40 years ago, next month.
Wow, that's crazy. Was it like covered by press? I mean, were there like...
Yes, there were hundreds of people there. We were on the front page of the Seattle Times, that kind of thing. But it wasn't national news. It was just local news. And most of the time we were local news. Although when we got to Bethlehem, we were on Good Morning America. That was our big thing.
But that is a huge thing.
But it was on Christmas. So, you know, this is a...
Yeah.
Human interest story.
Absolutely.
So we walked from Bremerton into Seattle and then down to Portland and across the United States.
And how long did just that leg of the tour?
We got there in November. So that's how long it took from April to November to get to Washington, D.C.
That's really not that long. I'm pretty pokey. It would probably take me a lot longer.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. We walked about 20 miles a day, up to 30. And sometimes it was just walking. You could see, like in Kansas, you could say, okay, see that tree? That's where we're going to stop for lunch. And then you see that other place, that steeple? We'll be there for dinner.
Were people receptive to this idea?
Mostly people, I think they were interested in the idea.
Yeah.
But, you know, we had people driving by, get a job, you know, things like that.
And well, I can imagine in small town USA.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that going down.
It depended, you know. Sometimes, like I remember this one town we were in southern Idaho, I think, where Reagan had been just quoted something out of Reader's Digest about nuclear weapons being important, and so this whole town was Mormon, and they there was only one family that would let us stay with them or support us, so mm-hmm. we stayed in their backyard, and they were really sort of ostracized from the rest of their community for doing something like this. But mostly people welcomed us. And we stayed in people's homes, or we stayed in church basements, we stayed in restaurant basements, we stayed in all kinds of places. Two people would go out ahead and plan out a month of the journey, and then come back and walk with everybody. And then two other people would go up ahead and figure it out.
Is there like one individual just on the first leg of the tour in the United States that really still sort of resonates with you?
I think everybody remembers this one woman. It was similar to that story that I just said. We were walking through this town. I think it was in Colorado, mm-hmm. I have it someplace, and the only person that would let us in, including all the pastors, all the churches, was the town drunk. It was a woman.
Oh, wow.
And we all stayed in her backyard and, you know, took showers on her hose and used her bathroom. And, you know, by then we were probably about 20 people. And it was a big deal. And she's like, oh, sure, come on, you know.
Do you remember her name?
I don't. Yeah. I don't remember her name.
But she opened her house up to you guys.
Yeah, exactly.
That's really awesome. You know, in the light of everything that's happening with Russia invading the Ukraine right now, people should really definitely think more about giving peace a chance. It's always a beautiful song to hear.
Yeah, we played that song a lot.
Because you said that you had like a movie that was show to people.
Yeah, we showed a movie. We usually sang some songs. At the end of this 20-minute movie was that song, Imagine. So we heard it
thousands of times.
So many times. But it always brings tears to my eyes. So
yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah.
You wanted to talk about an experience in D.C.?
Yeah, I just remember we're just about to D.C. We're in D.C., but we're walking to the Pentagon. We were going through a neighborhood, and I remember people always asked us, what are you doing? What is this about? Because we would a lot of times carry a banner that said peace or something. You know, we were crazies walking down the street.
Well, if you're going to do it,
you
got to let them know what you're doing.
So I remember giving this woman one of our flyers to say what we were doing. And she goes, what are you doing? It was a black woman with a great accent that I can't do. And and she goes, no, you didn't. You didn't walk from Seattle. Are you walking to Bethlehem, Pennsylvania? What do you... And I just remember because it was unbelievable by that time, you know, walked all the way from near Seattle. Anyway.
It is really astonishing.
It was fun, though. The easiest part was walking. The walking, once you got in shape, it was easy. The hardest part was making decisions as a big group.
That's a whole nother show.
And we thought the biggest accomplishment we had was everybody who left got there. Nobody dropped out. And that's a big deal.
That's a big deal. Yeah, because emotions run high. Yeah. So tell us, you started then off on your second part in Europe.
Yeah, we took off a couple of months, 3 months, I guess, to work wherever we could because nobody paid us to do this. So we each put $100 in a month. And we had money left over in the end. So
did you really?
Yeah, it didn't cost very much to do. Anyway, so we all went to wherever we could work. And then we met again in Ireland on St. Patrick's Day in Cork.
Nice.
And we marched in the St. Patrick's Day parade in Cork with the, it was called the CND. I should know what this is, Christian Disarmament something. I can't remember.
I don't know the group.
And then we kept walking. And through Ireland, we were so welcome. We left with more money than we got there. I mean, you know, and everybody, I want a pilgrim. No, I want a pilgrim. They all wanted to take us home. And George.
That does not surprise me.
Father George Zabelka was on what they called the Late Late Show. I don't know if you've ever heard of that, but it was.
I think it's with Gabriel Byrne.
Gabriel Byrne. So he was on that show. And so everyone would say, oh, it's Father Late Late. And so they all knew about it because everyone watched that show in those days.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like Johnny Carson or something.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I'm trying to picture his face right now because I've seen it. It's just been a long time, but I remember the name because he was really famous.
Yeah, he was.
I mean, I think. Is he still alive?
I have no idea.
Yeah. He is, right?
Yeah. Anyway, so then we walked through Ireland and through Northern Ireland. We crossed the border on Easter Sunday, which with people from both sides. And then
I was very brave in those days.
Yeah, it was a big deal, you know, but there were a lot of peace groups there and a lot of them that really made a huge difference.
So how would you like tell other groups that you were coming?
A lot. Some of them heard of us and wrote to us. Some of them we knew about or we'd heard about or other people that we were walking through some area, they would say, oh, you have to talk to so-and-so. You have to talk to so-and-so. So
communication was so much more.
It was so different.
If we had so different.
Yeah. If we had had, you know, email or anything like that, even phones, you know, we didn't have anything.
But you know what? You have... Like, you figured it out. I mean, you literally walked halfway around the world.
Right.
And that is quite an accomplishment.
So, okay, we walked through Ireland, then through Scotland, down through London, down to Dover, White Cliffs. And then we started in Dieppe in France and walked through France and then into Switzerland to Geneva, where we met with the START negotiators.
And what's that?
And they were strategic arms, something. Can't remember what it stands for now. But they were negotiating, the U.S. and Russia were negotiating the peace agreements at that time. And they were called START negotiators. And we met with the Russian. The Americans didn't want to talk to us.
Really?
We couldn't. The Americans just gave us a line, you know, and said, yeah, come take a tour, you know, that kind of thing. But the,
well, that's not what
but
you
the
want.
Russians... I was part of the group that got to meet with them. There were five or six of us, including George Zabelka, the chaplain. Mm-hmm. And they were...
Did you have to have a translator? Or did they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But most of them spoke English, too. And I met with Viktor Karpov. I mean, he was the main START negotiator. And I think we were probably on Russian TV because, you know, they're saying, hey, these Americans want to do this. You know, they're against their government. You know, we weren't against
these
our
rebels.
Government. Yeah, exactly. So then Geneva through Switzerland, then through Ireland, we came in. I mean, sorry, Italy. Mm-hmm. We came in at Aosta and walked down through Milan and through Florence and over to Bari. The biggest decision we had to make was how are we going to walk from Italy to the rest of the way through Bethlehem, to Bethlehem. So we could have gone through Yugoslavia and Greece and taken a boat, which is what we ended up doing. The other ideas were go to the south of Italy and go through Turkey, Syria, and Jordan, but they wouldn't let us walk all that way. We had to take buses because the governments themselves wouldn't.
You had to get special visas.
Special visas, special permission. The third way we were thinking about was go down through Egypt and come back up through Egypt and into Israel.
Wait, so that is the way that you took?
No, we ended up going through Yugoslavia and Greece.
Oh, okay.
And the Yugoslavian part of the trip was the most amazing. I think we think about that more than any other place. We probably talk about it more because we weren't allowed to talk to the people.
It would have been so closed off at that point.
Yeah, it was still closed off. We just walked for 6 weeks, and we walked over 3 mountain passes, and we washed our clothes in the river, and then we look up, and there were gypsies across the road, across the river,
washing their clothes.
I mean, we were gypsies, you know, and we camped out every night and, you know, cooked in the dark and over fires, and it was way more about the nature, about nature and about really paying attention to our bodies. And besides that, by then we'd really knew each other really well.
Oh, I'm sure you must have.
Then we walked through Greece and then we took a boat from Athens to Haifa.
Mm-hmm.
And then we walked through the West Bank and Israel and ended up in Bethlehem on Christmas Day of 1983.
And did you plan it to arrive on Christmas Day?
Yeah, we got there a little bit early, and we got to Jerusalem about a week early and kind of figured out what we're doing. And it was sad.
Were you welcomed into Bethlehem? Were there people waiting for you?
We walked on Christmas Eve. We walked to Shepherd's Field, and a lot of people from different parts that we'd met along the way met us and walked with us from Jerusalem to Bethlehem. So people from Scotland and a lot of people from the U.S., Germany, other places came and met us, and then they had to sleep on the floor with us. You know?
So how many people actually walked into Bethlehem together?
That's a good question. I'd say maybe, I don't know for sure, but maybe around 50.
Wow.
But, you know, we had swelled to much bigger.
From that?
Yeah, we have a lot of photos of everything. Of all of,
I'd
all
love
of
to
the
see
way.
This.
Yeah. You know, one thing, if you're interested, if you go to YouTube, my husband now, Michael Monteleone, he made a little 15-minute slideshow with interviews of the rest of the what we call pilgrims. So you look up Bethlehem Peace Pilgrimage, and it's called Steps.
Okay.
And it tells the story and shows a lot of pictures.
I want to definitely look that up. So how long did you end up staying in Bethlehem then?
You know, I only stayed there a few days.
And then did you guys disband
we
there?
We disbanded. It was so sad.
God,
some people
there must
stayed
have been
there.
A lot of tears.
It was. And I didn't want to go back to the U.S. I was like, I can't live in the U.S. after this, you know, because you're so...
Well, you're just on a different plane.
Yeah, yeah.
You really are.
It was culture shock to come back.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But I had a job.
And did you come straight back to Seattle?
No. My parents by then were living in Pennsylvania, and my husband at the time, who actually lives on Vashon, Bill Cox, and he was on the walk too, and a Jesuit volunteer, we went back to work for my parents for about a year. And then after that, we moved to Chehalis to live with a bunch of people that were on the pilgrimage and kind of a commune. And then after that, we moved to Vashon. So that was 85 when I moved here.
Well, Pam, I'm glad that you came here and I got to know you.
Lucky to know you, that's for sure.
Thank you so much for sharing that beautiful story.
Yeah,
it's really,
thanks for
it's
asking.
Truly inspiring.
They say we stand for nothing.
Thank you, Vashon Island. I am Megan Hastings, and that was the Cats and Jammer Follies. Join us next week for another trip around the world.
I've been everywhere.